It's having high comfort with yourself and self-esteem that you don't need to be the star of the conversation. And if you make them the star, you'll be more persuasive and you'll get your intended message across.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Jim Pancero. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Jim. One, he's a sales and sales leadership speaker, trainer, and consultant, and has been so for over 40 years. Two, he's received many recognitions and awards, including being inducted into the National Speakers Association Hall of Fame. And three, he believes in giving back by volunteering as a photographer for Dallas Area Special Olympics and a musical nonprofit organization. Plus, he's serving as the chair of the Board of Trustees of the National Speakers Association Foundation, which looks after currently $4.5 million benevolent fund dedicated to helping speakers in need and improving the community. Jim Pancero, welcome to Your Intended Message.
It's an honor to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you. And for someone who has been in the business of sales and sales advisory for over 40 years, the question I have, that's a long time, Jim. What's an amazing thing is you still have the hair isn't showing the years.
It's giving me another 10 years of my career. Yeah, I thank you. I think it's exciting to be talking about things about selling and persuasion and sales leadership, my favorite topics.
And certainly sales is important for any business. But I want to take a look at the people who are not in sales, or at least think they're not in sales, but they really are. And maybe there's something they could learn from sales if they could only get over the aversion to being called a salesperson. Jim, how can we help those people?
Oh, it's one of the realities of life is that over the last about 10 to 20 years, the profession of selling has taken a lot of hits. The assumption that I can do it on my own, salespeople are being brought in later in the buying process because customers don't trust them, so they're doing their research. So when we say, hey, you need to be more salesy in what you're doing, a lot of people don't consider that a positive comment. But there's two realities. The first reality is I have been a sales trainer and sales leadership trainer and consultant and coach and all the pieces of it for 40 years. And I would guess that over half the people that have gone through my sales seminars or classes done for companies, when they graduated from college, never thought they were going to be in sales. And if it would have been suggested, they would have been insulted. So what happens is they get into a job for a technical skill or for a business skill, independent of selling. But then as they become more senior and successful, what they find is the head of research all of a sudden is pulled into sales calls to talk about how we research stuff. And the head of production is called in to talk about the quality to a customer. So that, and a lot of times they are then put into a sales position as a career opportunity. So over half the people I've trained did not choose sales as a profession, but wound up having to be persuasive in sales in their job. The second part of it is, if we look at and remove the word selling and sales and just say, what's happening here? We're trying to be persuasive. I don't know of any job that does not require you to be persuasive, at least to somebody, whether it's to your customers if you're in retail, whether it's to your boss if you're in an administrative position of doing something, whether it's to your coworkers to get them to help you with a project, or just how you get along with your family. Parenting is the toughest persuasive position there is. because you're trying to persuade a five-year-old not to do something that they think is completely reasonable, like throwing ketchup on the wall or something. So it's, how do we persuade? How do we convince? Because you can't just edict. You can't just order anybody, because even if you can get away with it because you're their boss or you're their parent, they resent you for it. Starts to cause a distance and you become less effective. If we really look, if we want to be effective in life, our job is we have to motivate others. The challenge, though, of doing that is there's some real specific rules of motivation. The first rule of motivation is you can't motivate anybody to do anything. It's just, it's a fact. So how do we become persuasive in that environment? Well, it's the second rule. Everybody's already highly motivated. Zig Ziglar, the motivational speaker, used to say, I can show you a bunch of unmotivated people. It's called a cemetery. was one of his lines that he gave in the 60s and 70s in his audio programs. And if we look at everybody's already highly motivated, the problem is rule number three, and that is people are motivated for their reasons, their bias, their background, their culture, their beliefs. Everything about them biases how they view what motivates, what they want to be motivated about. So if we look at as a leader, as a manager, even as a coworker, all we can do is build an environment so that people want to motivate themselves. And if we look at how do we do that, how do we create an environment, whether it's with a peer, a boss, an employee, or with a customer or a neighbor, any of these things, if we look at it, what it comes down to is if we're more persuasive and we're more effective in how we communicate, we'll tend to get a lot more success in what we want to have happen, no matter what kind of business we have.
And Jim, I'm going to raise what is also probably a myth. People think, well, I'm the boss and I pay you, and as long as you're getting good pay, that's all the motivation you need. My guess is that probably not true.
There was a lot of studies done on this over the years, and I think money is listed as the seventh strongest motivator of workers.
Seventh.
Very low. And the other problem is money is a very short-term motivator. There is a vacuum that exists in every company between the workers and the managers. When the managers decide to give the workers a raise, they believe they're going to give them a raise because they have proven themselves to handle the job. The workers are feeling, why should I do the job until you pay me? So by the time the boss does reward by giving you a pay raise, most people are frankly rather upset or negative, because what took you so long kind of answer. It's not saying, wow, this is going to excite me for the next 6 months of my job and give me joy and happiness because I got a raise. It's basically the jerks just woke up. What took them so long? And why have I been doing a higher paid job at lower money for the last 6 months? So there's this vapor lock that causes problems, that we can't just go on money or on the fact you have a job. Look at the culture today where every business is short of people. If you had a worker that was unhappy with how the structure or the simplicity or the low pay or whatever, they likely went out and got another job. I read something that 56% of all workers today are unhappy enough in their job that they're at least partially looking for another job because of the environment the company has built, the environment the managers have built. I did this recently for some project on the generations. I was doing a presentation on this, that something like 30% of all workers left their job because of a bad boss. Their boss wasn't persuasive. The boss wasn't connected. The boss was being unreasonable. So the reality is, no matter what job we have, we've got to be persuasive. Now, we don't have to use the word selling, but there's a lot of concepts out of that side of the business that can make anybody more persuasive. Some best practices of how to be more persuasive. Okay, to go through a couple of them.
Jim, yeah, you teased us. So yeah, you have to open the door and show us the vault.
Oh, that costs extra. on a free thing, you tell them what you're going to do, but then when they pay you, you tell them how to actually do it.
Ah, that's true.
An old consulting joke. Anyway, I have some slides I wanted to show, if it's all right. That, by the way, I'm assuming you're listening to this, that you are not a salesperson. I mean, if you are, that's fantastic. But my comments I want to talk about are aimed at assuming you are not in sales. Frankly, you'd be insulted if somebody said you're selling them because you see it as a pushy negative term. You know, you've heard all the jokes. How can you tell a salesman's lying? His lips are moving. You know, all these other old jokes of just lack of trust. But if we look at persuasion, we can learn a lot from what works in selling that we can apply in our general life. One of the first and most fundamental ideas is to understand the foundation of persuasion. And selling and persuasion are really only two steps, no matter what you're trying to communicate. The first step is that we got to lower somebody's resistance. And only when we lower their resistance can we deliver our message. Now, what's interesting is how many people violate this most basic rule of persuasion. You have a boss walk in and say, I need the report by 7:30 and turn around and walk out. I walk up to you and you work at a counter in retail. And I walk up to you and go, you know, where the hell's the potato chips? There's a good chance that you're not going to be impressed or excited about helping me because it doesn't lower your resistance. Just walking, and it's been shown in studies. Now, this is pre-COVID, but it was shown that if you start a business meeting by everybody physically shaking hands, the meeting will take only 80% of the time it would have otherwise. Because it lowered resistance just by shaking hands. Taking a moment to just say, good morning, how are you, is a resistance lower. Because the more I can lower your resistance, the more comfortable you're going to be to answer my questions, and the more open you'll be in the answers you give me. It's just a simple concept, but says, you know, hey, be nice and be receptive before you try to be persuasive.
And I can see that we have a natural instinct for resisting because we're looking for threats. We want to avoid threats. And if we don't know you, if we don't have a relationship with you, then our first instinct is probably, okay, is this a friend or a foe? What's he going to want? What's he going to take from me?
And this is where getting your intended message across is such a challenge. Because if we look at this process, this resistance lowering is both verbal and nonverbal. If you and I were sitting across the table having a cup of coffee, and you said, Jim, I have some feedback I need you to hear. And I sat there and folded my arms to say, go ahead, I'm open. What do you got? sure, I'm open to suggestions. What do you want to tell me? I'm just screaming resistance nonverbally. So there's a good chance the message never get through. I will never let anybody in my presence look at their watch without it being questioned. If you and I are sitting having coffee and we've been talking for 15 minutes and you do this, I'll say, do we still have time? How are you doing on time? I will ask and qualify because they gave me a sign of resistance. They looked at their watch. If you're at a party and somebody's looking over your shoulder to see if there's more interesting people coming in, you can tell their resistance is high. This is not the time to give your dialogue on your next 15 projects. it's a simple concept. So we talk about lowering resistance. It's both nonverbal as well as verbal resistance. They don't have to be saying a word. You can tell they're not happy. If you're married, by the way, you understand this concept.
Jim, so we're meeting at a networking event. And what do you do? You walk up to me and what do you do to lower my resistance?
Well, and I apologize for putting structure to this, but what I found happens is the more structure you have, the more consistency you tend to have in anything we do. And if we look at the structure, there's some stuff out of selling that I think could be of help. And that is the steps of a sales call. There are defined steps. If we go from the time you walk in the door to talk to somebody on a face-to-face call, or from the time you answer the phone until the time you hang up, or on a Zoom conversation, there are steps that if you follow them can make you persuasive, more persuasive, and give you more control. One of the problems we have is a lot of times people just don't have the time today. So if they've only got 5 minutes, how do we still be persuasive and get what we want when we only got 5 minutes for the whole thing? There has to be more. It's an issue of control. It's an issue of process understanding. There are five steps to a sales call. Now, we can use that as a sales term of five steps to a sales call, but we can also say there's five steps to being persuasive. So if we, and by the way, it doesn't matter if we only have 2 minutes walking past each other at a party or whether we have an hour conversation over coffee, steps are the same. It's like an accordion. All we do is expand or contract the steps to fit what we need, but the steps are always there. And what's interesting, the steps are always there, even if you don't do it on purpose. If you have a successful conversation with somebody, you likely stumble through, but still use the steps. Five steps of a sales call. The first step of any persuasive situation is to lower their resistance. That's the greeting. That's asking, how's your family? That's, hey, nice office, nice car. It's some people call it the suck up step. It's trying to say, hey, isn't it nice to talk with you? It could be non-business related if you're on a business call, or it could be about their business. I can say, wow, I've been so impressed with your company here. I've followed you for years in town here, and it's been impressed how you've grown and how many locations you have now. That would be a business way of lowering resistance. The other is, hey, I love, are those your kids? Picture on the wall kind of thing, or just chatting to saying, hey, how's it going for you? It's interesting how many people call me, start off a conversation, and never ask me how I'm doing. They never ask me. A simple thing is, when you call somebody up, the first thing I ask in every one of these to lower resistance is this a convenient time to be calling? Whether it's business or personal, I have found that I have to ask that, because if this is not a convenient time, even if you want to talk to me, you'll still have resistance and you'll try to cut it short. But if I say, is this a convenient time? And you go, no, I just got out of the shower. I'm standing here dripping wet. When would be a better time to get back to you? When would be a better time? This is what I wanted to talk to you about. So that way, when they do call you back, or you get in touch with them, that second contact, their resistance is going to be a lot lower because of the respect you showed them. Because you asked, is this a convenient time? Do you have a few minutes to talk? It's just a good time to be contacting you.
And Jim, I'm noticing that, yes, the respect is the word there that you've demonstrated. And so if you approach me and you demonstrate that you're interested in my convenience and you show me respect, then I will say, oh, he sounds okay, this guy. He's not so bad. And so now you've demonstrated that you're not more important to me and you're not here to make me do something. You start off by taking the pressure off and, well, I get respect. Well, listen.
Frankly, if we look at persuasion, respect is the intended message we're really trying to deliver. Mm. Because that lowers resistance and improves their interaction and interest in actually answering your questions or telling what you're doing. I was on one sales call years ago. I was riding with a sales rep to understand their business, and they sold equipment that packaged cereal packaging equipment, like assembly lines. And we were visiting one of their customers that had this full installation, hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment. And so I was explained as a consultant doing research, understanding business. And I started asking him questions. Every single question I asked him, his answer is, why is that important? Why do you need to know that? Why are you asking that? And I realized very quickly we were going to get zero, because the resistance was so great, even on a simple question, there's no sense going any further. So the other thing is, if you're more aware of being persuasive, you also don't get in uncomfortable situations too long, because you'll know when to start to bail or even say, is this even helping? I'm trying to help you grow your business. Is this even helping? And if they're going, well, you know, we're already doing some of the stuff and everything, I go, well, that's a no answer. So sorry, I couldn't help you. And I'd rather bail on that than to try to just keep pounding away on something that's not appropriate. So the first is you lower resistance. This can only take 30 seconds. This isn't like a 10-minute effort to lower resistance. It is just something to affirm and lower the resistance. And the next step is we need to ask some questions. Because if I ask you questions, you'll tend to be more engaged. So I can't just go up and say, wow, I sell hot tubs and you really want a hot tub and these are all the benefits of it. I got to first ask you, gee, have you ever had shoulder pain? Have you ever had achiness? Would you like to be able to relax? If you're taking a really long hot shower and it felt really great, I've got to ask you questions to try to somehow connect or get your attention. So if we're both in the PTA and I'm trying to talk about how we need to do something with it, would ask and say, would you love to see your kids also involved in doing this? Do you think they would participate if we had this available? Somehow it's a hook to get their attention and to help understand what their motivations are. I mean, it's a sales example, and I apologize, but we recently purchased a hot tub. And I was amazed how ineffective the hot tub salespeople are here in Dallas. Because it happened consistently. I walked into a hot tub store and I say, how can we help you? I say, I'm interested in the hot tub. And then they go over and start telling me about all the jets and all the water pumps and all the other. They keep telling me all this stuff. And they never ask me, why do I want a hot tub? So they're shooting into a darkened room. So one of the reasons we ask questions in any persuasive situation is to make sure that we connect with the person and we kind of align the stars so that we're both on the same page. When I ask you questions, you're not surprised by it. Now, once I've done that, the third step is, okay, I got some suggestions. I got some ideas I want to share. And then the fourth is some kind of closure commitment. It does not have to be in sales getting a signed order. It does not have to be the person saying, you're right 100% and I agree with everything you said. It could be, I agree that we ought to keep talking about this. I mean, it doesn't have to be a commitment close. It just has to be a close concept of getting some kind of connection so that you find out where they are and you get an opinion of even if it's relevant or not. But there's one final step, and this is probably the most critical step to any persuasive process. And this is agreeing to your next contact. We don't end a call with asking for a commitment or asking for them to agree to something. That makes it an event. We want it to be a process. And the process of persuasion is that we need to make sure we set up the next time we talk. So it could be, hey, how about if I give you a call in a couple of weeks? So let's see where the kids are with this or anything like that. But it just, this way you have proactive control of the persuasion. Because now you're agreeing and setting up with them when you're going to follow up. So you know there's going to be a follow-up. If we just end with a commitment, yeah, we ought to work on getting something to do with our kids for the PTA. It's an open-ended thing where there's no commitment and there's no follow-through and there's no deadline of any concern anybody's going to be. And everybody's waiting for the other person to do something. Where if we take control subtly, softly, but if we take control to end the conversation or even asking, when would you like me to follow up? Or when do you think we can talk about this again? Just to get something so that it sets up. Now it's a process that keeps rolling over. Now we're really persuasive.
And Jim, so I'm thinking of people applying for a job, going through whether they're calling or whether they've submitted a resume or perhaps they're in the interview. So I'm thinking that this process is something that they're clearly selling themselves.
Probably the toughest sales call they have in their career.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it amazing how little preparation they do for the toughest sales call in their career? I went to all through undergraduate and graduate school. Getting an MBA, I was in sales. I sold full-time while I was going to school full-time to help pay for my education. And it was amazing to me about how people approach getting a job at the end of their MBA program. My MBA program was about 18 months, University of Cincinnati. And to get an MBA from them, it was a great university. It was an 18-month program. I met a mentor, he became my mentor the first day of our classes. He wasn't even with the university. He happened to be speaking to one of the classes. And he asked, what are you doing to get a job? And the class laughed, thinking, we've got 18 months on this. I came up to him and said, I was worried about that driving into my first day of class. How do I get a job? What's the next step? And so we had lunch and we started talking. And he helped me. And he said, okay, here's the advice. Who do you want to work for? And I gave him two companies in Cincinnati where I live that were the top companies for me to want to work for. And he said, if you do what I say, you'll have an offer from both. And I'm, wait a minute, because the two companies were IBM and Procter & Gamble. Mm. They interview hundreds of people. Yeah, he goes, if you do what I say, I promise you, you'll have an offer from both. So I said, okay, I'm in. He said, the first thing I want you to do is I want you to interview 100 companies you really don't want to work for. And I go, why would I do that? And he said, because when you go into a job interview, you can't assume the person interviewing you is competent or interested. So you need to know more about interviewing than they do, or else you're not going to have a successful interview. So you've got to make them successful in spite of their best efforts if they don't know what they're doing. The second thing is, I want you to read these 5 books on how to interview employees to hire them. I want you to read 5 books on how to be an interviewer, not to be an interviewee, because you need to know their job if you want to be persuasive. And I was in tears because I got offers from both. But by the time I walked into those interviews, I'd done 100 of these things. I was telling the person interviewing me what they needed to ask me. I would even say, don't you want to ask me about this? How about asking me about it? Wouldn't this help if you understood what I was doing here? How about this? And I was feeding them questions they asked me, because in both cases, they were junior employees that were sent to the college campuses to see if they found anybody of interest. Give us the top 2 resumes you talked to was kind of what was happening. learned that from one of the books I read. So as part of this, I knew I had to set this individual up to make them look good, even if this was the first time they'd ever interviewed anybody. Proactive control is one of the ways to be persuasive. And if you do it softly, it is affirming to people. It's not a negative. But first, we got to lower the resistance. Then we want to ask them some questions. Then we would want to share what we have. And then we get some kind of commitment and agree when we're going to talk again. That could be 2 minutes in the hallway, or it could be an hour over dinner.
And Jim, what I noticed you did with those interviews, which should transfer to any sales persuasion conversation, is you made the other person look good. You made their job easier.
In selling, there's something called second step selling. Step one is you give the customer what they want. So at step two, they give you what you want. Mm. But if you try to do your first step first, nobody will help you. It's called second step selling. It's being focusing on the person. There's some suggestions I'd like to offer, if you don't mind, of how somebody listening to this could be more persuasive. It's learning the steps of a sales call is kind of complex. You'll see it works. If you watch somebody else be persuasive, you'll see them following the steps even when they don't realize it. It's intuitive. But if you understand it, you can get better control of it. And getting better control of it makes you more persuasive, so you can get your intended message across to whomever you're communicating. So if we look at a couple suggestions. It's very specific. Focus on them. It's amazing how many people, when I talk to them, only talk about their stuff. We went to a New Year's Eve party, and I had six people I talked to, and I asked them about how's work, how's things going in your life, how are your kids doing? And they never asked me a single thing. They never asked me how I was doing, how my business was doing, what I was doing for interest, what my hobbies were, but they were sure happy to talk about themselves. Look how many people, when they come up to you, only talk about themselves. So one of the things we got to do is focus on them. So in asking them questions, so how's it going for you? How many times have you had somebody walk up to you and you've said, gee, what do you do? They told you in depth, but they never ask you back, what do you do? It's always one way. People are walking around with a mirror in front of their face and don't tend to see many others. So for us to be more persuasive, we got to break that mirror. And one of the easiest ways to do it is let's talk about them. Mm. Look what happens. Most people, when we say develop rapport with a customer, they want to go on and talk about their vacation instead of asking the customer about their vacation. You're talking about your stuff instead of, oh, I had a funny thing happen on the way here, instead of saying, how's your day going? We got to focus on them. And that is probably one of the most significant and easiest to implement tools that will make you more persuasive. Stop talking about yourself. I apologize for using that story about IBM and P&G, but I don't have anything close to it. But frankly, I don't like to use stories where I'm the hero. If somebody at the end of the story can go, good for you, it's not a persuasive conversation, right? Look at Facebook. Most of Facebook is shouting, look at me, and it's not helping anybody. If one of the uniquenesses, I think, in the videos that I post on LinkedIn and on Facebook, posting 150 a year, is I'm not talking about myself. I'm asking them, what can you do? Here's an idea to help you. And not be, it's not meant to promote. I promote myself by not promoting myself. Let's say it that way. Whereby not just saying, hey, hire me, hire me, hire me, I'm available, and screaming and shouting that. If I say, here's ideas, if you have that resonates with you, you're going to have a conversation. The second thing is the best way to be persuasive is to ask questions and listen. I once got challenged, and I did it at a party, and it was one of the most phenomenal experiences I had. And I was challenged by my mentor because I told him I'm going to a party next week at a customer's. The customer is taking me to a party. There's going to be 100 people there. I will know nobody except my customer. And I'm sure as soon as the party starts, I'll lose them. And he goes, perfect time. He gave me the challenge to make sure that everything I said during that party ended with a question mark. He said, make no statements, have everything end with a question. So if somebody said, who are you? You say, I'm Jim Pansera, but more important, who are you? Somebody says, what do you do? To say, well, I'm a sales trainer. More important, what do you do? And just make sure every statement out of your mouth has a question mark on the end of it. At the end of the cover, at the end of this party, they're driving me back to my hotel in the one. The wife of my client said, what did you tell those people? I thought, oh, damn, I got caught. And she said, they said you were brilliant. They could understand why we hired you as a consultant. Now, I never said anything. All I did was ask questions and listen. But because I affirmed and listened people, they felt I was brilliant. Isn't it amazing? The less you tell people, the more intelligent they think you are. It's just a good philosophy of life. There's a third thing. This sounds kind of funny, but it's follow the Roberts Rules of Order. If you've ever been in a meeting or a nonprofit where we've talked about Roberts Rules of Order, if you're not aware of it, Roberts Rules of Order was a book that was published that just gave the etiquette and the proper structure of how a meeting should be conducted. But one of the things that's most powerful about Roberts Rules of Order is it says you are not allowed to make a motion. You're not allowed to comment on a motion until you first tell us if you're for or against the motion. You got to tell us where you're coming from before you're going to tell us what you have to say. I'm amazed how many people will start telling me something, and I'm trying to figure out, is that positive or negative? Are they complaining or are they bragging about it? Or all these other things, because they didn't tell me where they're coming from. As I can't just give you a video and say, watch this and give me your feedback, because you're adrift. You don't know why I'm asking for feedback, so you don't know what to focus on. So you probably won't be able to help me. Robert's Rules of Order say, I have to tell you what I want before I ask you to do something. So if I said, I'm really interested in what you think of the visuals on my video, would you watch it and give me comments? If we give people direction with how and why we're asking, we tend to get more persuasive answers back. Simple concept. The next one is the questions you ask. Too many people ask what and how questions, especially to start a conversation. What we want to ask is why. We want to start with the why. Simon Sinek has done a great video on this, if you, and S-I-N-E-K. Simon Sinek, phenomenal video on the importance of why and how effective it is. So if I tell you why I want you to be involved in a project, you'll be much more excited about it than if I tell just what and how I need you to help me with the project. Final idea, affirm people. I'm amazed how many people will give me immediate feedback when I'm trying to offer them an idea by rejecting it. I've actually told some people, by the way, I don't really care if you like the idea or not. Just listen to the idea, if you would, then you can decide. But halfway through, they want to do like the Roman and go, well, that wouldn't work, or I can't apply that, or I don't have time for that, or that would never fit me. Instead of just listening to the thing and then deciding afterwards, we don't have to give feedback to somebody when they give us an idea. If you want to be more persuasive, anytime anybody gives you a suggestion, even if they think the idea is stupid, say, thanks for caring. Thanks for offering your idea. I'll think about it. That's all you have to do. You don't have to give them an answer back. And I watch most persuasive conversations become less persuasive when you're trying to help me by giving me an idea. And I'm just pushing back because I'm going, well, that wouldn't work. I don't have time for that. That doesn't fit. Instead of just saying, thank you for caring enough to offer a great idea. I'll think about it. I appreciate your suggestion. Didn't say I was going to do it. Didn't say I was going to agree with it. Just said, I appreciated it. That can make us more persuasive. The reality of this process is, in fact, one final comment to the final comment, I guess. Nobody can push against my hand with 10 pounds of pressure. Because the only way you can give me 10 pounds of pressure is I have to first agree to give you 10 pounds of resistance. If I don't give you 10 pounds of resistance, there's no way you can give me any pressure. Mm. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is complete indifference. So one of the things to be more persuasive is look around and say, where are you giving resistance? Because you might not need to. Frankly, I don't think they care anyway, but we don't need to give them direct feedback on every comment they give us. Like it's a scorecard saying, well, three of the five things you gave me were a great idea. Thank you very much. Well, that's not the intended message we want to deliver, is it? So that if we look at this, it's affirming. It is making the other person feel important. It's making an environment so they could motivate themselves by focusing on them and asking more persuasive questions and listening. Don't do all the talking. I went to a professional speakers convention recently, and we had a private dinner for the real senior people that were there. There was 50 people in this room at this private dinner. As the reception was going on prior to us sitting down to eat, I looked around the room because at the time nobody was talking to me. And 75% of everybody in the room, at the moment I looked at them, was talking. It was, you know, 70. I had one group I looked over, and all four of them, senior people. Now they're all friends. They've known each other 30 years. I've known them as well. But all four were talking at the same time. Everybody was talking. Nobody was listening. So if we look at how many times you've been to a place like that. So sometimes if we're more persuasive by actually listening and letting them be the star, We don't have to match it point for point, one for one. It's having high comfort with yourself and self-esteem that you don't need to be the star of the conversation. And if you make them the star, you'll be more persuasive and you'll get your intended message across.
Powerful advice. Jim, for people who want to know more about you and your programs and that you provide for salespeople, however, also for persuasion, the place to find you is at your website, and that is?
Pancero.com, P-A-N-C-E-R-O. I also have some products on selling skills that are some brief video products that are at advancedsalesuniversity.com. And most important, I hope that you check me out on either LinkedIn or YouTube, because I'm posting 150 videos a year, all under 90 seconds, meant to help you either become stronger in a selling idea or more effective as a sales leader. In fact, if you really want to stay connected, send me an email to jim@pancero.com, and you can sign up for my free newsletter that only comes out once a week. And all it does is list the postings for last week and the links to them. So if it's something you want to track and use with your team, they're available. It's all based on saying, we know you're good. Now the only question is, are you ready to get even better?
And you can find the links in the description below. Jim, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with someone who needs to be a person who's grown within their organization. There's hope for them, but they need to become more persuasive and learn some sales skills without calling it sales. Perhaps they're a technical person. Perhaps they're afraid of being labeled a salesperson. If you could give them one, two, or three pieces of advice that could help them be more persuasive while not selling out their soul, what might be that one, two, or three pieces of advice?
I think it's a great question. I think the first thing is to realize that persuasion is not a negative word. And if you want to be successful in whatever you're going to do, you're going to have to be persuasive. Even if it's being persuasive to let people leave you alone, to persuade them, just leave me alone for a while. The idea and the reality is that if we take control, not being dominant, but to take control, to understand that if we can guide somebody through a conversation that's more persuasive, like following the steps of a sales call, working the first lower resistance before you say anything to them. If you do that, by taking responsibility to make the conversation more persuasive, it benefits both you and the person you're listening to. Put the focus on them. Put the attention on them. And because it's second step selling. If I put attention on you, you'll tend to want to put attention on me. But it starts with, I have to be the initiator. Being persuasive is being proactive. We can't just wait for somebody to walk up and say, okay, entertain me, be persuasive. If you really want to be persuasive, that is a proactive initiative. When you go into a party and it's a room of strangers that you don't know anybody, do you go around and introduce yourself in a proactive way? Or do you sit in the corner waiting for somebody to come over and talk to you? Most people would wait. But the real most persuasive ones just go over and say, hi, who are you? I had a friend that his favorite line is to walk up to somebody, especially that was rather unique for their situation or who they were. And his favorite comment is to say that, looking around this room, I don't know anybody, but you look like the most interesting person here. I'd love to hear your story. And by doing that, he has walked up to people that frankly were on the edges of parties and were edges of meetings that nobody was talking to. And all of a sudden, the people just become their best friend because you affirm me. Everybody wants the same two things. We want to feel loved and we want to feel important. Anytime in your language, in your questions, in your communications, you can make people feel loved and more important, you will be effective no matter what you're doing. That's it. Simple concepts. It's being more proactive, initiating, asking questions, letting them talk. When for 40 years, I've ridden with salespeople doing research on my customers I'm going to do work with. I'll ride with their salespeople for a day or two. And in the old days, don't do it anymore because it got so repetitive. I used to carry a stopwatch. And it was just a simple stopwatch to start, stop, and clear. And I would not tell the customer salesperson that I had it. And because I was just observing these calls, I would sit there, they'd introduce me as a consultant learning more about their business, and they wouldn't say anything till the end of the call. I would just sit there with the watch in my pocket. Whenever the customers started talking, I turned the watch on, and whenever they shut up, I turned it off. So if we walked out of a half hour sales call, I can tell you exactly how many minutes and seconds that customer talked of that sales call. For experienced, successful salespeople that I've ridden with, want to guess what the average amount of time they talk on a sales call?
90% of the time?
Yeah, 100, exactly. It's over 90% of the time. The calls are interactive. They just do all the talking. So the customer asks the 5-minute question, a 5-second question like, why are you so expensive? And then they give a 5-minute answer in response. The customer asks another 5-second question. They give another 5-minute response. They walk out saying that was interactive, but you did the majority of the talking. This is the problem. Who are the slimiest salespeople you have ever met?
The ones who keep yapping.
And we don't have to name specific professions because they might be listening to your broadcasts and want to improve their intended message. So, but if we look at the people that are most slimy, the most high pressure, all the other negatives you can think of, one of the consistent things they have is they do all the talking. If you pick up the phone and you get a telemarketer, you can tell they're slimy. You can tell that it's not going to go well if they don't even give you a chance to talk. All they do is dump information on you, trying to get as much as possible before you hang up on them. That's why I start off every call with, is this a convenient time to show them this is not high pressure. It's not going to be a dialing for dollars call, whether it's a personal or business. Is this a good time to call? And if not, when would be? Let's talk then. It's being respectful. It's focusing on the person you're talking to. And it's realizing that you got to follow a second step plan. If you give them what they need, they'll tend to give you what you need. Pretty straightforward.
Good advice to end on. My guest today is Jim Pancero, reminding you that selling persuasion is a process and always ends with the agreement to the next step.
Great summary. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.